This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
We're not going to get to audio files today because of Gilbride's, because when he's available. So we'll move that away till tomorrow. But there are some things that we do want to get to, right? So let's do like a little rapid fire buffet segment here. We were just talking about UFC. We were just talking about Bones' win on Saturday night. And I was mentioning Ariel Helwani, a friend of the show, who does a great job covering all the MMA and the fight game on ESPN. And they were on the post-fight show discussing the idea of the judging like you and I talked about.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, well, if you want to beat the champ, if you want to be the champ, you have to beat the champ. And,
yep.
And I've said that's like saying that a foul for an MVP isn't the same as a same foul for a rookie, which a foul's a foul's a foul, right? So points are points. And this is his take here. I want to see what you think of this. Is it kind of agrees with what I was saying?
This drives me nuts. It's probably my biggest pet peeve in all of combat sports. When I see people say, to be the champ, you gotta beat the champ. You gotta really earn it in that round. You really have to steal the belt from him. If you are a judge and you are sitting down at the end of a round and you say to yourself, did he do enough to beat the champion? You should be fired. You should never be sitting at a cage or a ring anywhere on this planet. That's not how judging works. You sit down and look at who won the fight regardless of who is the champion, who is the contender. You look at each round, you say, who won? 10-9, 10-9, 10-9. That's it. We're not talking about Ric Flair here. This is ridiculous.
I love that take. You agree?
You absolutely, Ric Flair. You get to beat a man, you got to beat the man. And it got to be, to me, Alan, to me. Mm-hmm. If things are close, it goes to the champ. You have to take the belt, right? The champ has been sitting on top. It has to be definitive that you won that round. Close rounds could go to the champ, right? Because also, if you want to talk about all the little things that go into if you won a round or not won a round, was the fact that Bone Jones was coming forward because Reyes was tired. So he was, what they call in boxing, like as far as like the aggressive, you know, movement or whatever, ring generalship. The ring generalship, all that stuff was going to Bone Jones as it looks like Reyes wasn't giving him the opportunities to score because he started running because he was fatigued.
Mm-hmm.
And Bone Jones,
yeah.
Right, ring generalship is what they call it. And he was starting to walk him down.
Right.
And then you start adding, if he would have finished the fourth round strong, then it would have been no contest. But I think what they should do is they should eliminate the five rounds. Go four. Why do you say go four? I want open scoring.
Open scoring meaning like up on a scoreboard.
Up on a
so
scoreboard.
So everybody in the crowd knows
exactly
what the judges are scoring.
What the judges are
scoring.
And
the fighters know.
Exactly. You want to talk about excitement? A guy knowing that he's down 3-1, knowing that he got to go. But also what you'll get
well,
is
you know, the
guy
point,
that knows that he's up, he'll run.
And if you know the point structure as well, you kind of know what he's got to do to catch up or any of that stuff.
Right. But what happens is if a guy is down two rounds, he know he got to win round three. So you're going to get his best, right? So I think if you have open scoring, and then if it's tied up, you go to a deciding fifth round where everybody knows if you win this round or if he wins this round, you don't have to ask your corner man, am I up? Am I down?
So it's like overtime.
Bro, it's tied. You got to go win it.
So it's, yeah, like fifth would be like having overtime.
Yeah, you got to win it.
Wow.
And then if you get, and then it, guess what?
That'd be crazy.
Guess what? If you get to the end of the fifth round, and the judges, you got one for you, and it's a draw. Guess what? You go into a sixth round. Double overtime.
Exhausted.
Exactly.
But I'll give you that. That's real interesting.
It's no excuses.
That's tremendously interesting. But the fact that the crowd would be in on the scoring because it's up on a board somewhere. I mean, I guess the judges can still be, anonymous because they don't have to have the judges' names up there.
No.
You're saying cumulative or no? You're saying.
I'm saying. Open, like, it's been, I may be tripping because sometimes I forget stuff, but I swear that. I swear that I've seen open scoring in boxing before. I believe it's been boxing matches where they've had open scoring where they say what the score is. And then that lets the boxers know what time. I don't know if I'm in an alternate world, if I took the red pill or the blue pill and I'm tripping and maybe that was in the Matrix or I dreamed that. But I swear, I think I've seen boxing with open scoring.
It's interesting. No, that's a really interesting concept. It would be, the crowds would really be into it.
Imagine you got two champions and they know, man, it's tied. It ain't like, because sometimes your crowd, your corner man can lie to you because he thinks he's seeing it from your perspective. Like, no, we tied. Nah, man, you up.
It takes away the suspense, obviously, of the final announcement because you already know who wins when the fight's over.
But no.
It removes the suspense.
No. It is still suspense because you don't know who won the last round.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
You see what I'm saying? When you get to the last round.
So you're saying it's open scoring only for the first four rounds?
Yeah.
Okay. But what if you've won three? What if you win that fourth round? It's 3-1. It's over.
But you know this dude about to go for broke. The only way he can win and the only way he knows he can win.
Cumulative scoring, right.
Is he knows I got to knock his ass out.
Yeah. You could win a round, but it doesn't mean that the fight's over cumulative, right?
Because your quarterman lied to you, so you think it's 2-2. He's like, no. It's 3-1, man. You got to go knock his ass out.
All right. That I like that. 800-919-3776. That one is interesting.
Dana White, you welcome.
So, Dana White, we'll get him on the show, see what he thinks.
He'll come on.
We're definitely going to get Helwani on the show. I mean, he's working right now, but we'll get him on the show eventually because we're good friends. He loves the Knicks, but he's great at this, and you guys will have fun in that conversation.
Yeah, right next smoke, Holmes.
So now we're wondering what's going to happen with the Astros, and when the season begins. And I do feel like, are there going to be opposing pitchers who want to hold them accountable, throw inside, throw high and tight, like all those things, send messages to these guys that, you know, what you guys did, you cheated the game, you've also tarnished the game. You know, a lot of that anger towards these players, because it's one thing if you're taking PEDs and you're putting up big stats. It's another thing if you know what pitches I'm throwing and it costs me not just maybe a chance to win a championship, but maybe it even cost my career. Like, for instance, Mike Bolsinger was a pitcher for the Blue Jays in 2017. He only pitched 11 games. He's suing Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
He's suing Major League Baseball.
Good for him.
He threw 29 pitches in one game, but he feels like, because he got lit up, four runs, four hits, three walks, and a third of an inning. Because he got lit up, he had no chance again after that, and it cost him opportunity. So now you have that going on.
You know who else should be on that lawsuit? Yu Darvish.
That's a good point.
Yu Darvish, several others.
Clayton Kershaw.
Sent him to the Windy City. He could have been out getting sunburned, you know what I'm saying, out of L.A. Now I got to go get my money from Chicago, and I'm worried about getting jacked. I can't even go out and enjoy my money. It gave me $100 million. I can't even go to go get me a deep dish pizza because they out there shooting.
Well, A.J. Hinch was in that interview with MLB Network. And a lot of he's doing this because this is now, of course, this is for him, the retribution tour now. He'll go around and try to, you know, clear his name. He wants to be the Mets manager next year. Oh, wait. I mean, of course.
Yeah.
We all know that's probably what's going to happen. So one of the questions asked is the answer to this question about whether or not the players were using buzzers. The answer is the thing to me out of this entire interview that I feel like was the most eyebrow raising of all. And this is how he answered that question about the buzzers.
We got investigated for 3 months, and the commissioner's office did as thorough an investigation as anyone could imagine was possible. I mean, I know he mentioned the emails and the texts and the messages.
You hear that at the end?
Yeah, that's why I've been trying to hold a lot
together. I need that as a drop. I mean, that voice crack, that's when you know, like you're... That's that guilty voice.
I need a throat lozenge.
but I mean,
you got your humidifier on in here. What's going on?
The non-denial. Well, we were investigated, and nothing came of that. So next question.
I mean, if you're not ready to be fully transparent and just put it all out there, then you need to protect yourself, because guess what? If he does another interview, and Verducci was doing his job, he gave him a soft landing. Well, but if you do another one, then the next person's going to start that interview with that question.
Absolutely.
Like, you didn't say anything about the buzzers. How can you not know if they were using buzzers? I don't want to go to the investigation. We know they can't find out everything.
No, but the way to, you know.
I just want a fair chance, man.
I mean, what are you going to say to that? It doesn't do him any good. Everybody's like, why can't you just be honest and forthcoming? Because he wants another job. And what player is going to trust him if he's out here just outing all his players now? He was against it. He's trying to make that abundantly clear. This is not me. This is Lou Now and all his geek squad.
Yeah.
Lou Now and the geek squad, which, as Chris Caney said on the show earlier today, which I agree with 100%, baseball lost its soul when it went all in on analytics.
Yeah.
Because it, to me, it took the game away from the players and it turned it into Stratomatic.
Yeah, pushing the envelope, right?
That's everybody. It. It's Stratomatic now, and that's what the Astros decided. They were going to take this to a whole nother level. You know, they took Moneyball and took it to another level.
Right.
Because now it became
the code breaker.
Yeah. It became the whole idea is we can code break this thing and we can, like, they basically turned the game into a video game where it's all now just binary code.
But,
and you no longer have some of the fun that was in the game because of, and it all starts with the analytics. It really does. Analytics are important, but it shouldn't be everything. It shouldn't be all end all.
Right.
It's good if you're an agent and you want to prove why your players should make, you know, $20-30 million per year or why they should get more in arbitration. Mm-hmm. Numbers are great for that. But when you start using numbers to dictate how you play the game on the field,
right,
where you tell a player, you can't hit it that way. We don't want you hitting it there. Where you tell a player who has speed, no, stay on first. Don't steal the base. It's not worth it. Where part of the entertainment of the game was Ricky Henderson would get a walk, which is a boring walk. But you knew that if Ricky's on first, the whole stadium is watching Ricky as much as they're watching the pitch.
A.K.A. Willie Mays Hayes.
That's from anything like that. Because the pitcher now is rattled because he's got one of the fastest guys in the game and he knows he's dying to steal that base.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now there's a new game within the game. Now there's something else to watch.
Yep.
Instead of, we're just going to try to hit it over everybody's head. Hit it over the shift.
Yep.
We're not allowed to hit it into that gigantic gaping hole in the field that no one's covering. Even though you are skilled enough to hit it there, the numbers tell us that single's not going to help us.
Right. I mean, everybody, I mean,
the game is, you lost it. I'm telling you, it's lost its soul, Bart. And this is the chickens coming to roost. I'm telling you, this is what this is about now.
Now, just wait until they go into the juice baseball to create offense. And the fact that Gardner had a career year in home runs because they juiced the baseball, so you're going to have that as well.
And you have pitchers like who complain.
Yeah, Verlander.
All of a sudden,
one of the biggest people. Yeah. Like, hey, what the hell's
going
on?
My pitches aren't moving because the seams aren't. I can't grip them as well.
Right, Tanaka. Right, couldn't do that. Yeah. But I want to go back to something else you kind of said because I never really thought about that until you guys kind of started talking. If Brody's besties with Hinch, and they were roommates, so it should be a level of trust there.
Yeah.
Why the hell he didn't ask him about Beltran and what really happened?
It's a good question.
Or
maybe he did, and they felt like what they don't know won't hurt us. Meaning owners, media.
But they knew this dude was under investigation.
Yeah, but it's
that baseball was coming in. So
it's the guy they wanted.
If you're my boy,
do you think Brody wanted Beltran?
No, he wanted AJ. He wanted AJ.
Do you think the Wilpons wanted Bill Beltran?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that they knew that Beltran had some unique techniques and as far as being able to give a competitive advantage?
Well, they said he was a relationships guy. That young players looked up to him, that he was great to, you know.
Did that.
Yeah. That's what they put out. That's what they put out there as their reason to hire him.
Yeah.
With zero experience.
But
actually he had a lot of experience.
Exactly.
As we're learning.
Yeah. Wonder what the Yankees utilized him for as well. Because don't tell me that when you're going against the Astros that he didn't say, hey man, they're stealing your pitches. They got cameras out here. And that's why you talk about Sanchez and why it was so many mix-ups, because they were continuing to change their signals because Beltran probably told them that they got the cameras. And that's why that explains the Chapman smirk.
Yeah.
Because he knew that they outfoxed you at your own game.
Well, he figured they can't hit what I'm throwing.
Yeah, but.
And then they did.
But also maybe they thought that, hey, we mixing them up so well with these, because it explains all the mound visits that they were having with Sanchez, because they were continually changing what signals they were on to try and test them up. And eventually the cameras and the technology caught up at the most pivotal moment, and you got Altuve able to bang the right pitch in the most pivotal time. And you have Chapman like, this mother.
Yeah, exactly. He gave him that look like, you got me. He got me. And I give him credit that he didn't, you know, because the easiest thing to do after the game was like, they knew it was coming. He knew the pitch was coming.
Yeah.
Now, on the K show, Gio Urshela believes, he believes Altuve knew that pitch was coming.
Yeah. Now, to hit it still is another thing.
Well, you still have to have that skill. I understand that. But it's interesting that Chapman has yet to say that. Now, Masahiro Tanaka's not happy. He just was quoted through his interpreter also saying that he does believe that they cheated.
Now, did he really say that?
In 2017. you think the interpreter went rogue?
Interpreter went rogue.
Like, Masahiro's like,
you can't handle the truth.
Masahiro said, no comment. Yeah. And then the interpreter went, oh, hell yeah, they were
cheating. You're down right out of the cold red. You want me in that hole. You need me in that hole. Who's going to do it? You, Santiago? Don't answer it. I'll answer it. Tanaka was just like, nah. I don't think so.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic. People should say, this why this needs to be on TV, though, because the intensity in your face when you do that stuff.
I love movies.
It's so good. No, so we both do. That's why. See, the entertainment part for me is you're doing the movie, and I just sit back and enjoy it. But that's why we need to be on TV, though, because they need to see the intensity in your voice. It's the can't-wait intensity that comes out just so randomly.
They need to at me.
All right, another topic, and we had to move on quickly here. We've got Kevin Gilbride going to join us at the bottom of the hour. This is another story now. Now, we just told you earlier in the show that the Chargers have made it official that Philip Rivers will move on into free agency. Both entities, a mutual parting of ways. So now the Chargers are going to need a quarterback. All right.
I heard there's one available.
And we obviously know that Tom Brady might be a really good fit in L.A. TB12 would certainly do well in Hollywood. But Michael Irvin was on WEEI, and he had this crazy theory that before you take a drink, I think you might spit it out when you hear this.
And at Super Bowl in Miami, some very significant people and I had some conversations leaning in that same direction. And it was shocking. I mean, I had a vodka cranberry in my head, and when they said it to me, I put the drink down and said, let's talk a little bit more about this right here. You know, because I promise you, I had a conversation with people, I can't tell you who, about that same scenario going down, and I was like, I just don't know if that's a real possibility.
So basically saying,
yeah, the weed.
Well, he had what did he say, vodka cranberry.
Vodka cranberry.
That's what
two
he had
or three. That's when the same thing that...
is this like in Miami Heat? Not one, yeah. Not two, not three.
The same thing that Jerry Jones had when he called me Raymond.
He called you Raymond?
I never told you that story?
No.
Jerry Jones thinks my name is Raymond. I told him I played for the Ravens. He was so damn drunk out of the Senior Bowl. Like, thanks for your service, Raymond. No, man, I said I played for the Ravens, and I wasn't in the military, son. There's no service. The hell are you talking about? Damn Dallas people, man. Freaking crazy.
It's Raymond and Hahn,
98.7. Thanks for your service, Hahn.
But I mean, the notion that the Cowboys, this is Irvin's trying to float out, that the Cowboys would trade Dak Prescott and sign Tom Brady.
For 2 years. Manchurian candidate.
Is this one?
Give him the gas face.
Is that what we're doing here, or is this one of those that do you give it even a second to think about it? Do you just think about it for a minute and say, yeah, see that the face you're making, this is radio. No one can see the face you're making.
Right. So I got no poker face, man.
No, the face you're making has to have like a different type of, you have to actually tell me what you're saying. You say no.
Yeah, I say, this is Michael Irvin doing the work of Jerry, putting that propaganda out there.
Just want to be in the conversation?
Trying to take leverage away from Dak Prescott, because if Dak Prescott steps out and say, I'm not reporting with Father Dill, and they force that franchise tag, and he can show up whenever he wants to. He's underneath Mike McCarthy, where he needs to be there and learn a new verbiage. Mike McCarthy specifically took that job because his belief in Dak Prescott and thinking that he can take it to the next level. So the leverage really now is on Dak's side, because not only do you have to appease Dak, you have to appease your new head coach that you brought in to change the narrative. So now if you want to switch and say, hey, we'll bring in Tom Brady.
But quarterbacks?
No. Right now, joining us is Kevin Gilbride, the coach of the New York Guardians. They got their win in the debut week, so 23-3 over the Vipers at MetLife Stadium in what was a pretty exciting, I guess, a successful debut weekend for the second version of the XFL. And coach, thanks for joining us. And I guess that's the first question I'll ask you is do you feel like this was a successful debut all around?
Well, I think from a league standpoint, there's no question that the quality of play was at a very, very high level. I think it's probably surprised a lot of people. The enthusiasm, the crowds were good. And, of course, us specifically, we were delighted to get the win.
And, you know, early on, you saw, at least I, you know, observed across the league, it looks like the defenses are a little bit ahead of the offenses. How do you kind of catch that up, knowing that you guys really didn't have a breaking in period with the preseason, you guys, or the lack thereof of preseason?
Yeah, it's just a matter of time. I think the cohesiveness of certain units, particularly like the offensive line for instance, takes a little bit longer. I know in our particular game, we started out quickly. We had a couple of big plays, but we did not have the consistency that you need to have, particularly in the second half and especially in the run game. But our protection was good. There were opportunities to complete some passes in the second half that we didn't, that we completed in the first half for big games that we didn't get done in the second half. Defensively, I thought we showed remarkable resiliency more than anything else. I thought Tampa Bay's offense really operated at a really almost flawless level, except when they got down into the red zone, particularly in the tight red zone. And our guys just hung in there, and I've never been part of a team or even seen another game where they got down there four times inside the 10-yard line and came away with no touchdowns. We were very stout against the run down there, and we made a couple of turnovers, a couple of picks that made all the difference in the world. But it was a great win for us emotionally, I can tell you that.
Yeah, and the big one, obviously, the fumble turning into a touchdown as well down there. So the defense getting it done in the most important areas. I'm curious, with all your experience, with your resume, was there any trepidation for you to step into a job like this, into the XFL, knowing the first time around how things went with the XFL, how it seemed to be more about entertainment and show and less about football? This feels a little more pure football than the first time around. But when you first considered this job, did you have trepidation?
I definitely did. And I immediately said no for a couple of reasons. You know, I've been fortunate that I've been offered just every year a job here or there in the NFL, and I've turned it down. I've had no desire to go back at all. But this league gave me a chance to be at home and be with my grandchildren and do all the work that you do in the NFL at whatever city you're residing in. The film evaluation, I could fly my coaches in to meet with them in our place down in Florida. But most importantly, I've always spent time with the grandkids and yet go back and still have the enjoyment that you get when you're teaching a bunch of young guys and you're trying to develop a culture and an approach and a way of doing things. As I thought about that, that was my first concern, and I felt very comfortable as I talked further and further with the people of the league, particularly Oliver Luck and Doug Whaley, about the way the league was going to, you know, was going to be run. You know, was it going to be accentuation on, you know, the frivolity that you saw, mm-hmm. or was it going to be football? And they just kept saying over and over and over again, it's going to be football the way you know it. We're going to tweak some rules that we think will make it more interesting, particularly in the kicking game. But more than anything else, as you look at it, it's pure football, the football that you love and that the people that we're talking to as coaches all love or wouldn't get and become part of it. So, yeah, it was something that was a concern. But as I talked to them, they reassured me that, you know, again, there's going to be an accessibility to us and to the players that you don't get at the National Football League that at first look seems a little bit intrusive. And I've got to be frank, when you go to talk to a guy and he's not there because he's being interviewed, my first reaction is not necessarily a good one. But they have told us. In fact, Shane McMahon came to us yesterday right in the locker room before the game. He said, remember now, coach, you got control. If you're coaching somebody, you know, hey, we're going to get the interview. You tell him not now. I want to talk to him now. I want to get this straight, and then we'll get the interview done. So, you know, they're going out of their way to do this in a professional way. I think all of us feel comfortable about it. Now it's just a matter of us continuing to get better so we can get a few more wins.
Hey, Coach, I'm glad that you brought up the kickoff, because I think if any rule can be adopted by the NFL, we know that it's going to be the kickoff, because they're trying to take the concussions out of that play. I'm just trying to figure out the nuance of it so I can kind of make a more articulated argument about it, because I say with that flat line, it almost stops being, to me, kickoff and turns into an extended run play. So what's the schematics that go into that? Can you put offensive linemen out there? Can you run counters? Can you do reverses? You know, because if you can let the backside of a side go and change the math by pulling guys around, then that can be one of the most explosive plays, because we become accustomed to seeing the kickoff as a play where you go get your popcorn to go refill your drinks.
Well, I think you've got some recognition of the inherent problems with the kickoff. More often than not, you got penalties. And I used to just say, hey, just let it go. Let's get it started at 25. I'm ready to go. Well, now you have to return it. As far as some of those other things, I have not seen a lot of coaches so far. Now, it's early in the season, but it to me, it more resembles not a running play, but a very similar to almost a punt, because you got, instead of starting right immediately across from each other, you're 5 yards apart. And that's done purposefully in order to lessen the violence of the collisions between the two lines. So you got 10 guys lining up, you know, within 5 yards. But you can't put linemen out there because the guys run around too easily. You got to have athletes out there just like you do in your punt protection and your punt coverage unit. So that's what it looked like. Now, we tried to bounce a couple plays where we started up inside, right, and we tried to gain some leverage. Yeah, and we hit one early. We returned it to the opposite 47-yard line, which was great, and we were very close to doing it the second time. Now, fortunately for us, we kicked off five times, and we were able to hold them inside the 30-yard line all but once. So we felt good about our coverage. One time we jumped offside. There's a unique aspect to the rule. First of all, if you kick it out of bounds or into the end zone, if you kick it into the end zone, it comes out to the 35. If you kick it out of bounds, it goes to the opposite 45. So you got to be very careful and judicious where you put the ball. But sometimes you kick it and you can put it in a place where the guy, you keep it in field of play, but where the returner has to, you know, travel a distance. We actually jumped offside because the rule is when the guy catches it, you can take off. But if it hits the ground, you can't take off till he gets to it. And one of our guys just took off right away. Mm-hmm. So that's, we got penalized. We actually had the guy tackled inside the 25. And then we had to move it out to the 31, I believe it was. But yeah, it's you know how everybody in football always says, hey, one third, one third, one third. The reality of it is, I don't know if everybody actually, honestly does one third on the special team. But I can tell you this, you better in this league because the emphasis is on the return game. Punt, you don't have your gunners, don't release early. They have to wait till the ball's punted. And again, the penalty for kicking and getting into the end zone or angle punting it when you kick it out of bounds is so severe, you have to kick it so the returners have a chance. So you better have a guy that, A, can return, catch it and then return it, and B, you better have some people that can cover it, or you're going to be at a severe disadvantage.
I tell you what, Coach, I'm going to have to rename this league the All Heart Team, because you're basically telling me that you guys are saying that kickers are people too and they have families and they need time to be able to show their skill set. Are you able to run like traps with that? I'm just trying to understand. Are you guys able to check traps and whams and stuff like that?
Yeah. Hey, well, you can try. And that's the problem. If you miss, the guy's coming down.
Yeah, somebody going night-night.
Yeah, so I mean, there was definitely an effort yesterday by Tampa Bay to do some cross blocks or what you're calling a trap block. And fortunately for us, our guys ran right by it and they couldn't catch up. That's the thing, the speed of them coming down. Whereas on a normal line of scrimmage play, you'd like a guy coming by you because then it makes it easy to kick him out and trap him and exploit that. But here, there's still the distance between the returner and that line that's blocking for him. So you try to do that and you miss. It's not very good for the returner.
Go to sleep, Craig.
Yeah. We're talking with Guardians coach Kevin Gilbride, a name, of course, a lot of New Yorkers do recognize, now coaching the Guardians team as they got their debut win on Sunday against the Vipers in a very impressive 23-3 win. When we're speaking of these rules, I'm wondering if you have one of the differences in the rules between the NFL and the XFL, what the XFL is using. Is there one, and that also includes the communication now as well with the quarterback, as we know, and the other skill players, that you can have a lot longer before the snap. Is there a difference in a rule of the game that after your debut went, you know what, I like that? Which one is the one that's maybe your most favorite?
I think the rule that we didn't go into yesterday, but it's certainly causing a lot of sleepless nights, is the overtime. But I think from a fan's perspective, they're going to love it. It's almost like sudden death. You each line up
you know, Team A is on the 5-yard line. You get a shot, then Team B goes out there. They get a shot. You got five opportunities, and whoever's at the end, it's over. So the emphasis on red zone, or what we call when we're on offense, green zone plays, has been expanded significantly because all your extra points, there's none. There are no kicks. And
right.
You can line up on the two and go for one, or you can line up on the five and go for two, or if you need to, you can line up on the 10 and go for three. And again, the overtime is all from the five. So you have your normal red zone or green zone plays, but now you better have in reserve a lot of additional plays because all your extra points are like green zone plays or red zone plays. And then again, if it comes down to the final crunch, it's going to be determined by how well you do from the 5-yard line.
All right, and we'll be remiss if we don't ask you before we let you go about what it meant to you to have Eli Manning in his retirement speech, that moment, to mention you, of course, the impact that you had on his career and maybe the impact that he had on your career. What did that mean to you?
Well, it meant a lot. I think the world of the young man, and, you know, I was with him for 10 years. So I've been fortunate. I've coached a lot of great quarterbacks. A couple of them are in the Hall of Fame, and Kurt Warner and Warren Moon. And hopefully that Eli's going to be in exactly the same place. But, you know, I've had a lot of great ones, and he's as good as any in terms of work ethic, professionalism, his approach to the game, the way he goes about the business. I tell people all the time, if you think he's a good player, you ought to see the kind of guy he is just as a human being.
Yeah, a lot of people have certainly said that about him. Hey, Coach, we appreciate the time. Congrats on the win and continued success, and hopefully we can get you back on here on the show later in the season.
Sounds good.
All right,
thanks,
awesome.
Guys.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.